Okay, welcome to the nightly Gita study class. And we're continuing with our study of the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we'll finish the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita today. So before we start, we'll chant Jai Radha Madhava, and as usual, we're asking everybody to pray for the health and the quick recovery of His Holiness Bhakti Chuu Maharaj. And asking Krishna, if you so desire, please cure Bhakti Chuu Maharaj. So we ask everyone to pray like that. Okay, so let's start chanting Jai Radha Madhava. Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Gopi Jana Ballabha Kiri Vardhauti Gopi Jana Ballabha Kiri Vardhauti Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Uva Kunya Bihari Gopi Jana Malaba Kiri Bharat Hauti Gopi Jana Malaba Kiri Bharat Hauti Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari Jai Radha Madhuva Kunya Bihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravidakacharya Osutera Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Avaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Jai ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Jai Namacharya Shrihidas Thakur Vijay Premseko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadha Shivasa Gold Bhakta Vrinda Vijay Shri Shri Radhakrishna Go Bhagavata Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijay Vrindavanam Kijay Maturadam Kijay Jagannatha Swami Kijay Yamunamai Kijay Shivani Lasideva Gijai, Samaveda Bhakta Prindi Gijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Ho. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale, Srimati Bhakta Vedanta Swamit Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurani Pachani Nivasesis Nivari Paschatate Shatarni. So, Om Agandha Timidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigarave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my wonderful spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakta Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly taken us out of the ocean of nescience and given us transcendental vision by cleansing our eyes with transcendental knowledge, as that word translation. Okay, so anyway, so we're going to continue with our Bhagavad Gita study. And one announcement, another announcement at the beginning, and we'll also make this announcement at the end. Tomorrow morning is Saturday here, and is also Saturday in Fiji and New Zealand. And so at 6:30 tomorrow morning, I'll be giving class on Sanatana Goswami, whose disappearance day it is tomorrow. So you're all invited to tune in, same station, at 6:30 tomorrow morning, which is 10:30 Australia, New Zealand, I mean New Zealand, Fiji time, 8:30 Australian time. And in India, it's 9.5 hours later, so it's perfect timing for all of you. It's like 6 o'clock. Is it 6 o'clock? No. No, it's not 6 o'clock, it's 5:43. It's 3 o'clock. Or 3:30. Something like that. Yeah, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. 3 o'clock in the afternoon in India. And it's 6 hours later in Europe, Central European time. So that's 11 o'clock in the morning. Okay, and I'll make that announcement again at the end of class. So let us start with Bhagavad Gita. And so we are right now up to the 45th text in the 6th chapter. As we mentioned, the 6th chapter is called Sankhya Yoga, but primarily it's dealing with Hatha Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. So we're just finishing up. And just yesterday, the verses we dealt with addressed Arjuna's doubt. And what was Arjuna's doubt? That if someone doesn't quite make it in yoga, then whatever he tried to do, whatever advance he made, is lost. That was Arjuna's doubt. And then he would also have left his material life and had lost that too. So double loser. And Krishna addresses that doubt by saying that if one makes a little advancement in yoga and spiritual understanding, then you take it with you from one lifetime to another, particularly that if you make a little advancement, you're born in the heavenly planets and then have to take birth in a rich family or Brahminical family on the earth planet after that, not too bad. And if you're very spiritually advanced in this life, then next life, and don't quite make it, you will take birth in a family of transcendentalists in your next life. And if you're super spiritually advanced, and we didn't mention this yesterday, then you will take birth wherever Krishna's pastimes are taking place, in whatever universe they're taking place, and you will have a good old time and get trained up to go back to home, back to Godhead. So basically, there's those three options. The third one wasn't mentioned specifically yesterday, but I'm adding that one because that's what the Vedic literatures and Srila Prabhupada told us. So you choose. Become a little spiritually advanced, and you get to go to heaven, Hawaii, and then take birth in a rich family. A little more spiritually advanced, you take birth in a devotee family, and very, very much spiritually advanced, and you take birth in a family in Braj. And you have one of the Braj gopis, the elderly gopis, be your mother. So, to me, that's pretty preferable. Or actually, if you're completely advanced, that's what happens too. So usually you have that little interlude before you go back to the spiritual world. So, let's continue. Prayatna yatamanastu yogi samshu dakil vishaha aneka janma sangsidhas Tato yati param gatim. Prayat not, by rigid practice, yata manaha, endeavoring to, and yogi, such a transcendentalist, sang shudha, washed off kilbishaha, all of whose sins, and eka, after many, many janma births, sang siddha, having achieved perfection, tataha, thereafter yati, attains param, the highest, Katim destination. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Long time. Of course, in Krishna consciousness, if we follow Srila Prabhupada's directions in this lifetime, then we don't have to go through those many, 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 many births of practice. And we can attain the supreme goal even in this lifetime by Prabhupada's mercy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. If you get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a lame man can walk, a dog can swim in ocean. That's pretty good. Or a blind man can see. So the impossible becomes possible, or the ordinarily long process becomes shortened. Or, as described in the Bhagavatam, then the water of the material ocean becomes shrunk to the size of a calf's hoof print, and one can step over it very easily. So Prabhupada explains here, a person born in a particularly righteous, aristocratic, or sacred family becomes conscious of his favorable condition for executing yoga practice. With determination, therefore, he begins his unfinished task, and thus he completely cleanses himself of all material contaminations. In other words, we find many people, they come in touch with Krishna consciousness, and it's just like, hey, this is what I was doing before. I mean, I had that experience when I first went to Tulsi worship in the temple. It was just like, deja vu, you know, this is what I've been doing. Wow, count me in. So, that is a very common experience. When he is finally free from all contaminations, he attains the supreme perfection, Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the perfect stage of being freed from all contaminations. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the 7th chapter, which we'll get to shortly. Text 28. Yesham tvandagatam papam jananam punya karmanam dvandvamoha nirmukta vajante mam jadavataha. After many, many births of executing pious activities, when one is completely free from all contaminations and from all illusory dualities, one becomes engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, in other words, we've come to that platform of being engaged by Prabhupada's mercy. I was thinking about that today as I was exercising. I was thinking, wow, how fortunate I am. And, you know, I didn't deserve this, but I've been given such a great fortune by Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. Text 46. Tapasvibhyo diko yogi yani bhyo pi mato dikaha kamribhyas chariko yogi tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. Tapasvibhya, then the ascetics. Adikaha, greater, yogi, the yogi, yani vyaha, then the wise, the pi also, nmataha, considered, adikaha, greater, karma vyaha, then the fruit of workers, cha also, adikaha, greater, yogi, the yogi, tasmat, therefore, yogi, a transcendentalist, bhava, just become Arjuna, O Arjuna. A yogi is greater than the ascetic. Ascetic is someone who just is really austere, but is not dedicated to Krishna. Greater than the empiricist. Empiricist is one who thinks seeing is believing, or if I can measure it with my scientific instruments, it's real. But if it can't be measured, it's not real. And obviously, you can't measure the soul with scientific instruments because the soul is non-material. You don't have spiritual instruments to measure. Just like you cannot measure the weight of someone with a photocell. You know, there's certain instruments that are appropriate for measuring things. Weight is measured by a scale. Light is measured by a photocell and the electronics behind it. So you got to have the right instrument. If you don't have a spiritual instrument, you're not going to be able to see spirit. So that's empiricist is thinking, you know, I have to be able to measure it, see it, whatever. And greater than the fruit of worker one means one who is working for gain in this world. Therefore, Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And here, Krishna is referring to yogi in a larger or broader sense. I mean, sometimes in a limited sense, we think yogi, or yogi is someone who performs the Stanga Yoga, Yam Nayam, Asana Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Jhana, Samadhi, who, you know, the traditional Hatha Yoga. But yogi is one who connects, from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means to connect. And who does it mean to connect with? I don't know, Krishna. It means to connect with Krishna. So anyone who is connecting with Krishna, even if they're, let's say, if they're a particular religion, sectarian religion, whether it's Catholicism, Christianity, Judaism, Muslim, if they're actually connecting with God, they're yogis. Because that's what the word yoga means. Like religion, religare, ligament, means connect, to reconnect, actually, to be precise. So purport. When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such a process is named differently by various practitioners in terms of the particular method adopted. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called karma yoga. In other words, one offers the results of his activities to Krishna. When it is predominantly empirical, in other words, and analytical, analyzing this material world, it's called jnana yoga or sometimes sankhya yoga. Sankhya, the word sankhya means to count, which sometimes is taken as to analyzing something. When it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Supreme Lord, it is called bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga, or Krishna consciousness, is the ultimate perfection of all yogas, as will be explained in the next verse. The Lord has confirmed herein the superiority of yoga, but he has not mentioned that it is better than bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is full of spiritual knowledge, and therefore nothing can excel it. Asceticism without self-knowledge is imperfect. Empiric knowledge without surrender to the Supreme Lord is also imperfect. And fruitive work without Krishna consciousness is a waste of time. Therefore, the most highly praised form of yoga performance mentioned here is bhakti yoga, and this is still more clearly explained in the next verse. Ooh, next verse is really important. That's the key verse in the whole chapter. But before we get to that, I want to explain something that's been on my mind about performing bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is under the jurisdiction of Krishna's internal energy. Okay. Krishna has, we've talked about this before, Krishna has the internal spiritual energy, Krishna has external spiritual energy, Krishna has us, the marginal energy. Okay. So, bhakti yoga is non-different from the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, this internal energy is personified as Sri Krishna's eternal consort, Srimati Radharani, who is the original Shakti, original energy of the Lord. She's a person, of course. And in order to be under Daivam Prakriti Ashrita, and there's an interesting verse in the Gita, Vajanti Nanya Manaso Katyad Aviyam. So the Mahatmas, the great souls, the great devotees, are under the jurisdiction of Daiva Prakriti. That means the internal potency. So connecting that with Srimati Radharani is that those who are devotees are under the jurisdiction of Srimati Radharani. There is no question of being a devotee without being under the jurisdiction of Srimati Radharani and worshiping her, or worshiping her in terms of one of her other expansions, but she is the topmost. And all of her expansions, as the expansions of Krishna are concerned, are serving Srimati Radharani. So those who are Gaudiya Vaishnavas, which we are, or I am at least, take the service of Srimati Radharani as the highest and all other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, expansions, whatever, consider it the same. They don't have a different opinion from me. So, on that note, text 47. This is the real key verse in this particular chapter. And the verse is important to remember this verse. Yoginam api sarvesham mad gatenanta atmana shadavan vajite yomam same yuktat vo madaha. Yoginam, of all yogis, api also, sarvesham, all types of, mat gatena, abiding in me, always thinking of me, or having their goal as me, anta atmanaha, atmana, within himself, shada van, in full faith, bhajate, renders transcendental loving service, yaha, one who, mam, to me, the Supreme Lord, saha, he, may, by me, yukta, tamaha, the greatest yogi, mataha, is considered. So, it's interesting, this word bhajate, it actually implies or means much more than rendering just service. It means rendering service in an unalloyed fashion. In other words, without any other desire other than to please the object of service. Sometimes the word bhajate is translated as worship, but it means far more than that. It means like utter devotion, basically. As you're doing your worship, as you're doing your service, whatever, that's bhajate. And that bhajate is the bhakti shakti, and that bhakti shakti is controlled by Srimati Radharani. And if you please Srimati Radharani, you get bhakti shakti. Krishna doesn't control bhakti shakti. Krishna doesn't control devotion for himself, which may come as a surprise. He doesn't. Bhakti is independent. And bhakti is actually expansion of Srimati Radharani, who is the Adi Shakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, one has to please Srimati Radharani in order to get bhakti. And one has to please Srimati Radharani's devotees, too. So translation, important translation of all yogis. It's absolute. The one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me. He is the most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. And look at the Sanskrit. Sanskrit actually says that. Yukta tamaha. Tamaha. I mean, yukta, connected, highest or greatest yogi. Mam, sa, yukta tamaha, mataha is considered to be the highest yogi. And who is considering? That's Krishna. And that's of yoginam api sarvesham, which means of all the different types of yogis, the Sankhya yogis, the Atha yogis, the Jnana yogis, the Bogi yogis, and the Bhakti yogis. I made up that, Bogi yogis. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, the word bhajate is significant here. Bhajate has its root in the word, in the verb, bhaj, which is used when there is need of service. The English word worship cannot be used in the same sense as bhaj. Similar to what I said, worship means to adore or to show respect and honor to the worthy one. But service with love and faith is especially meant for the Supreme Personality. Got it. I'll explain what Prabhupada means. We can worship someone just to get something from someone or for ordinary, let's say, etiquette purposes. I mean, let's say if some government official walks in here. I mean, I won't worship him, but I'll get up. In one sense, worship him. You know, I'll stand up. Even if the mayor of Hillsborough, which nobody's heard of in the three worlds, walks in, what to speak of the President of the United States, who I do have some disagreements with, as everybody knows, walks in, I will get up. So that's a type of respect and honor. But it's not service with love and faith. One can avoid worshiping a respectable man or a demigod. It may be called discourteous. But one cannot avoid serving the Supreme Lord without being thoroughly condemned. Whew. Every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, every living entity is intended to serve the Supreme Lord by his own constitution. Failing to do this, he falls down. Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, 5th chapter, text 3, confirms this as follows. Yaisham purusham sakshat atma prabhavam ishvaram na bhajan chiravajana ti nanti stanad vrashta patanchadaha. Anyone who does not render service and neglects his duty unto the primeval Lord, who is the source of all living entities, will certainly fall down from his constitutional position. In this verse, also the word bhajanti is used. Therefore, bhajanti is applicable to the Supreme Lord only, whereas the word worship can be applied to demigods or any other common living entity. The word avajananti is used in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's also found in the Bhagavad Gita, avajananti, mambhuda, in the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, text 11. Only the fools and rascals deride the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Such fools take it upon themselves to write commentaries in the Bhagavad Gita without an attitude of service to the Lord. Consequently, they cannot properly distinguish between the word bhajanti and the word worship. It's very interesting because the bhajanti entails, of course, worship, but worship with love and devotion that is never stopped. Ahaitakiya pratyata yavna supersedite. Never stopped under any condition, and the love just increases. That's bhajanti. The culmination of all kinds of yoga practices lies in bhakti yoga. All other yogas are but means to come to the point of bhakti in bhakti yoga. Yoga actually means bhakti yoga. All other yogas are progressions toward the destination of bhakti yoga. From the beginning of karma yoga to the end of bhakti yoga is a long way to self-realization. Karma yoga without fruit of results is the beginning of this path. When karma yoga increases in knowledge and renunciation, the stage is called jnana yoga. When jnana yoga increases in meditation on the super soul by different physical processes and the mind is on him, it is called ashtanga yoga. And when one surpasses the ashtanga yoga and comes to the point of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, it is called bhakti yoga. It's a long process. Actually, Krishna himself says that Monam Janmanamante Janavamam Prapajite Vasudeva Sarvaniti Samahatma Sudurava. After many, many births and deaths, one comes to the point of understanding, you know, Krishna's it. And there's other verses too, you know, Marashas Sahasreshu Kastyat Yadavi Siddhaye Yatatam Api Siddhanam Kastyan Mam Vedi Tatvata. Out of many thousands of men, maybe one is looking for perfection, out of many of those, or perhaps a few have achieved perfection, and out of many, many of those, perhaps one knows Krishna in truth. Factually, bhakti yoga is the ultimate goal, but to analyze bhakti yoga minutely, one has to understand these other yogas. The yogi who is progressive is therefore on the true path of eternal good fortune. One who sticks to a particular point and does not make further progress is called by that particular name. Karma yogi, jnana yogi, or jnana yogi, raja yogi, hatha yogi, etc. If one is fortunate enough to come to the point of bhakti yoga, it is to be understood that he has surpassed all other yogas. Like we described before, it's like a ladder. That's also described in the Vedic literatures. And the highest rung of the ladder, the topmost rung of the ladder, that is bhakti yoga. All the other rungs are like hatha yoga, jnana yoga, or Raja Yoga, whatever. Therefore, to become Krishna conscious is the highest stage of yoga. Just as when we speak of the Himalayan, we refer to the world's highest mountains, of which the highest peak, Mount Everest, that's a nice Sanskrit name, is considered to be the culmination. It is by great fortune that one comes to Krishna consciousness on the path of bhakti yoga to become well situated according to the Vedic direction. The ideal yogi concentrates his attention on Krishna, who is called Shyamasundara, who is as beautifully colored as a cloud, whose lotus-like face is as effulgent as the sun, whose dress is brilliant with jewels, and whose body is flower-garlanded. illuminating all sides is his gorgeous luster, which is called Brahmajyoti, means the light of spirits, spirit light. He incarnates in different forms, such as Rama, Nrisimha, Uraha, and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he descends like a human being as the son of Mother Yashoda, and he is known as Krishna, Govinda, and Vasudeva. He is the perfect child, husband, friend, master, and he is full with all opulences and transcendental qualities. In other words, we all have desires for certain relationships with a perfect child, a perfect, I want a perfect husband, but anyway, a perfect mate, a perfect friend, a perfect what have you, benefactor, and Krishna is all those things. So make a relationship with Krishna and everybody else, except for Krishna, pure devotees, falls far behind. Like that great devotee, Mirabai, she showed an example in this regard. Anyway, if one remains fully conscious of these features of the Lord, he is called the highest yogi. This stage of highest perfection in yoga can be attained only by bhakti yoga, as is confirmed in all Vedic literatures. Yasha devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru. Tashaite katata aryalata prakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. It is a fact. It's from the Shveta Shvatara Upanishad, that's what SU stands for, 623. It is a fact. If one simply has faith in Krishna's representative and the Vedic literatures and Krishna himself, of course, and Radharani, then everything gets revealed. It's really easy. One just has to have implicit faith. Implicit faith doesn't mean simply believe in the existence, but also to believe that if we simply do what Krishna wants, or what Krishna's representative wants, then we'll achieve perfection. Very easy. Bhaktirasya bhajanam tad iha mutro pari naira sena mush amin mana kalpada meta reva nais karmyam. Bhakti means devotional service to the Lord, which is free from desire for material profit, either in this life or in the next. Devoid of such inclinations, one should fully absorb the mind in the Supreme. That is the purpose of naishkarmya. In other words, activities that don't give you karma. The whole purpose is to fully absorb your mind in love for Krishna. Not artificially, because that's from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. In other words, just fall in love with Krishna. I mean, what's the problem? These are some of the means for performance of bhakti or Krishna consciousness, the highest perfectional stage of the yoga system. Whoops. And that's the end of the Bhaktivedanta purports of the sixth chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of Dhyana Yoga, meditational yoga. Okay, chapter 7. We're moving ahead. Chapter 7 is entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. The Absolute is Krishna, of course. And here's a little, summary in the beginning. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Truth, the Supreme Cause, the sustaining force of everything, both material and spiritual. Advanced souls surrender unto him in devotion. Whereas foolish souls divert their mind to other objects of worship. Some people worship their cars, some people worship their wives. It's ridiculous. Some people worship their dolls. Some people worship their money. I mean, so many objects of worship. And some people worship demons. It's a fact. I don't want to get into politics. Anyway, it's too much for me not to say something. Okay, so make Maya great again. MMGA. Right. think you get the idea. So, you get a hat, you know, make lust great again, make racism horrible. What does greatness mean? If you want to make America great, then America has to be spiritual, has to be based upon some foundational principles, such as, you know, everyone's created equal, which is actually one of our foundational principles, and spiritual principles, under God, so to speak. That's what it means to make. And compassion for all, everyone, compassion for everyone, and that's what it means to make America great. Not to denigrate people because they have a different color skin or a different nationality or whatever, or different gender. That's not what makes us great. It makes us small if we do those things. It makes us insignificant. It makes us useless. It makes us karmically liable. So, moving ahead after that positive statement, first verse, in the seventh chapter. Shri Bhagavanu Vachamaya Saktamana Partha Yogam Yunjam Madashaya Asamshayam Samagramam Itagyasyasi Akshanu. Shri Bhagavanu Vacha, the Supreme Lord, said, to me, Asaktamanaha, mind attached, Partha, son of Pritha, Yogam, self-realization, Yunjan, practicing, Mat Ashrayaha, in consciousness of me, Krishna consciousness, Asamshayam, without doubt, Samagram, completely, Mam, me, Yata, how, Yasyasi, you can know, Tat, that, Trinu, try to hear. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So this obviously a continuation of the last chapter, where you're talking about controlling the mind, focusing the mind, practicing yoga, and ultimately, as the last verse says, you know, yoginam api sarvesham adgatenantaratmanam, to actually connect with Krishna, to be the best type of yogi. And so, continuation. In the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Wow. Can't wait. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulence is described herein. Also, four kinds of fortunate people who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna are described in this chapter. That's very interesting. In the first sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyoti, or localized Paramatma, and that means the energy of God, the light of God. Brahmajyoti means light of the absolute, or localized Paramatma means God in everyone's heart. Realization is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. Like if you know Krishna, you know everything. But you may not know how to fix your car, but at least you know the purpose of everything and the essence of all spiritual knowledge. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyoti and Paramatma in full. It's a fact. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, the material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. It's good to know everything. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam, is the first and most important. Shravana means to hear. So there's nine processes, and they're all based, the foundation is hearing. The Lord, that's why we chant Hare Krishna and hear Hare Krishna. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, Takshunu, or hear from me. No one can be a greater authority than Krishna. And therefore, by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna-conscious person. Because, as I mentioned yesterday, Krishna is omniscient, he's omnipresent. Who knows more than him? No one. One is therefore to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. For those of you not familiar with Prabhupada's term, puffed up, it basically means proud. And Prabhupada takes that from a particular story that he told many times about a frog, actually two frogs, sorry, about two frogs that were in a well. And one frog went out in the world to seek his fortune. So as he was going out in the world to seek his fortune, he came upon the ocean. And so he came back and he told the first frog that, wow, there's this big body of water. It's incredible. And the first frog, the frog that remained in the well, said, how big is it? And the frog who went to the ocean said, you cannot imagine. And the frog who was in the well puffed up his little pouchy a little bit. And he said, well, this big, this big. I mean, obviously, it's not a true story. But Prabhupada was illustrating the point. A big, big. And the frog went to the ocean, kept saying, no, no, it wasn't that big. This big, this big. And finally, the frog in the well exploded after he puffed himself up. So that's where Prabhupada got that expression. Because he thought he knew everything. You know, what is the ocean? It can't be that big. So we try to measure God, or we try to understand God, or speculate on the nature of God using our tiny little brain. It's not capable. Like we mentioned before, you got to have a spiritual instrument, your spirit, to see.
I can't tell. Sorry. Oops.
That was my Google who gets set off sometimes. So you have to have a spiritual instrument. You got to be careful. You have to have a spiritual instrument to measure spirit. That's it. It's as simple as that. You can't measure spirit with a material instrument. I mean, that was something we spoke about earlier in today's class. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality, God of the Absolute Truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Very important verse. Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana vidyantaksto yavadrani vidunoti surutsatam nastapareyeshu avajayeshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama shloke bhaktir bhavati bhai naishviki tada rajastamo bhava kama nubhateyascheye chitta reteya anavidam stitam satte prasiddhi evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangha shajayate vijate vidya ganti stijyate sava samshaya kshiyante chasya karmani drishta evat manishvare. So here's the translation. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literature, so to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita, is itself a righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, in other words, it's service to Krishna. Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, Ridyantoksta Yavadrani, acts as a best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In other words, if you keep hearing about Krishna, Krishna in your heart does the sweeping. Prabhupada one time said, you know, as far as purifying the heart, if you don't engage Krishna, it is like washing for us. It's like washing a piece of coal. Now, I don't ever know if you've ever taken a piece of coal and taken it to the sink and washed it with soap and water. It doesn't get clean. In fact, your hands get all dirty. So Prabhupada said the heart of the people in Kali Yuga is more or less like that. It's So the only way to cleanse it is to have Krishna cleanse it. And of course, when we chant the holy name, Chaitodarpana Marjanam, Baba Mahadvagni Nirvapanam, then Krishna is directly there. He is personally, Namachintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vira, he's personally doing the cleansing. Otherwise, there's no possibility of us cleansing the heart by any other system, meditation, or twisting the body in different ways. The cleansing of the heart can only be done by Krishna. And Krishna is invoked by the chanting of his name. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. In other words, the knowledge is already there. You know, Prabhupada uses the word right here, dormant. Dormant means sleeping or not manifest. Like if you have a bear that's undergoing hibernation in the winter, he's in his dormant state. And when you wake him up, better watch out, he's not dormant anymore. So it's like a potential state. You know, like in physics, you learn about potential energy. Potential energy would be like you have a stone that's all the way on top of a big building, and that's potential. And the potential gets actualized when you push the stone off. Potential energy becomes actualized energy. Anyway, so we have this dormant knowledge. It's there. Just have to wake up. In other words, it's like having amnesia. It's there. You just have to be reminded about who you are. And that's the process of presenting Krishna consciousness to others. We simply remind people. We don't have to force them and say, you better believe or you're going to hell, buddy. No. Chant Hare Krishna. Don't believe what we're saying. That's fine with me. Just chant. Come back tomorrow and tell me how you feel. All right, so they chant Hare Krishna. Wow, I felt really good. Okay, chant some more. Come back tomorrow. Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Comes back tomorrow. Wow, I saw a blue boy playing a flute. I wish it was that quick. Anyway, it's dormant, it's there. Krishna consciousness is Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prem, as described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance. And thus material lust and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the signs of God perfectly. Very easy, all based on Srimata Swakata Krishna. Hearing about Krishna. Thus, Bhakti Yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of Atham Shayam Samagram. That means without doubt, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. And that's from the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, texts 17 to 21. I recommend reading them for you all. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. Wow. Okay. Let's try to do another verse. Jnanam teham sabhiyanam idam vaksham asheshas ta yagyatva nehabu yonyaj yagyatavyam avashishate. Jnanam, phenomenal knowledge. That means things that we can see. Te, unto you, aham, I, sa, with, vijnanam, numinous knowledge. That means knowledge which is beyond the perception which you realize. Idam, this, vakshami, shall explain, asheshataha, in full, yat, which, jatva, knowing, na, not, iha, in this world, buyaha, full, further, anyat, anything more, gatavyam, knowable, avashishate, remains. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. In other words, material spiritual knowledge. And the Upanishad says, vidya avidya, that one has to understand material knowledge as well as spiritual knowledge in order to make progress in Krishna consciousness, because you have to know how to serve Krishna in this world. You can't just be a dumbo. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them, is what Prabhupada is saying. This is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by the devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession directly from the Lord. This, of course, we refer to as epistemology. How do you know what you know? If to be absolutely sure of knowing what you know, or convinced that what you know is absolutely true, you have to get it from an absolutely irrefutable source, and that source is Krishna. And those who are repeating the words of Krishna are doing the same thing. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes, and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practice. When the cause of all causes, that's an interesting statement from the Brahma Sangita, Sarva Karana Karanam. In other words, in this world, everything we see has a cause, right? There's a reason. You know, I have the cause of my, this body were my parents, in one sense, and they had parents, and they had parents. You go all the way back, and you go back to Krishna. And know that Krishna, for his pastime's sake, he appears to have parents, but actually, he doesn't really have anyone who gives birth to him. He's birthless, eternal, Satchitananda, eternal bliss, full of knowledge. When the cause of all causes becomes known, Krishna, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. The Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad, 1.1.3, say, Kasmin nu, Bhagavato, Vigyate Sarvam Idam Vigyatam Bhavati. In other words, one who knows Krishna knows everything. Because he knows the purpose of everything. As I mentioned before, it's not that he knows all the little details, everything happening in every atom, how to fix a car, how to fix a computer, or, you know, what's the direction from here to Timbuktu. You know, this is all just like material knowledge. It's not necessary. But he knows the purpose of everything and how to use everything in Krishna's service. So, in that light, we will stop and take questions. Okay. Here we go. So, now we will open up the floor for questions. Give me 1 second. You are now officially allowed to unmute yourselves. So, who has questions? Whoops. Nobody has questions.
Hare Krishna Gurudev.
Ah, Hare Krishna. Asumut.
Yes, Gurudev, pranam.
So, good to see you. So, what's up?
All is good. Just a small question. Regarding the topic today, you had explained that, you know, if you are not able to complete your devotional life in this life and not able to go back to Godhead, then you said that you might take a breath in a transcendental family's house or take a breath in the Krishna's pastimes. And all this happens, you have to take the breath again in this material world. So, yes. The question is, you know, I read in the Mother Dehuti and Lord Kapila's discussion about taking your time living in the mother's womb for 9 months is not a real not a joke. You know, it's really a very hard task and so painful out there that you remember your 100 lifetimes what you have done wrong in those years and you go through so much suffering. So, so that will happen to the devotee as well?
No. If a devotee has to take birth, a very advanced devotee, he'll be remembering Krishna in the womb, when he's in his mother's womb, and he'll be free from pain. Just like we see, many great devotees are subjected to what would be considered painful situations in this world, And they're not miserable. They're not experiencing pain. So the same thing with a child in the womb. If he's actually an advanced devotee. And also, if his mother's eating prasadam, I guess he'll be having some kirtans in his mother's womb. Uh-huh. And dancing. You know, Gauranga, you know, this poor mother, you know, she doesn't know what's going on there.
I know.
No, but I mean, if the mother's taking prasadam, it's pretty ecstatic. I mean, it's not that I would like to be cramped up like that mm-hmm. inside, but, you know, you're getting prasadam, you're hearing the holy names. I mean, it's pretty cool. Now, if you have a mother who smokes cigarettes, you get nicotine. That's pretty bad. Can you imagine a mother who smokes cigarettes and the child can't cough, obviously, but there's nicotine going, because the mother and the child are connected through the umbilical cord, and the child is getting whatever garbage the mother puts into her body, the child gets in his or her body. Horrible. Or the mother is drinking booze, you know, whatever. Of course, you probably don't know what booze is. But booze means liquor. Then the child is getting liquor in its system. Or if it, and there's many children who are born to drug addicts that actually are addicted to, you know, heroin or something like that. So it depends on whose womb you're in. I mean, if Krishna wants, not that I would want it, but I mean, I would accept being in the womb of a Krishna conscious lady and hearing the holy names, you know, that's, I mean, whether you're in the womb or out of the womb, material energy isn't such a great thing, isn't it? I mean, right now you're young and enjoying life. You have a young wife and everything like that. So you're thinking, I'm on top of the world. You know, what is this? Bruno? He's old. He's just like frustrated old guy, you know. So just wait. Just wait. You know, you're still a very young man. Because he's not that young. I'm just teasing him. I'm teasing him because I know him very well. So sometimes he's like inside jokes. And you hear in the background his wife yelling at him. So anyway. I tell you, I'd rather be in a pure devotee lady's womb than have some lady yell at me. So. I'm just joking. His wife's not yelling at him. He's just making a play there. Okay, good question. So who else has a question here?
Hare Krishna Gurudev. This is Rishikesh.
Oh, Rishikesh again.
Yeah. Gurudev, I've seen, you know, many devotees, I mean, many people, many living entities who have taken birth in devotees' family or Vaishnava family. But later on, once they go to college or something, they drift away from Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
Association. It's very easy to explain. You could have someone who's really good, and then you hang out with the wrong people, and you just become like your association. It's as simple as that. Like for example, I mean, I'll give you an example where there's two little children here in the community. Their names are Jagai and Madai. No, I'm just joking about that. Not really. They're two little children which remain nameless. Ishwar and Sundari. So anyway, so there's two children in the community. Nameless. I always do that. Who have been brought up and they haven't had any bad. They've been with their parents. Parents are good role models. And they're both initiated at a young age. And, you know, I asked them, do you miss, you know, going to the bars, you know, whatever. And they don't just have a desire. They like, they're happy being Krishna conscious. They don't miss anything because they have, of course, people may say, that you're doing an injustice to the kids. You should expose them to everything. Okay, so let's use that argument with the coronavirus. So is it an injustice to people to keep them from being exposed to the coronavirus? Is life being unjust to me because I can't go out to the discos at night like I usually, no, not really, but anyway, because I can't mix. Is that unjust? No, it's to protect me. But sometimes there's a material association is a virus. We made that point before. It's several of our classes ago, we talked about how we have to be inoculated or take a vaccine against the virus, having a good, strong spiritual program. But particularly children, and I hear them in the background. Somebody.
Sorry. Kids are playing here, sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. So that's all right. So particularly with children, they're very impressionable. And so you have to be careful. And yes, certainly children can make their own choices. They should be aware of this world. It's not that the two children who I previously mentioned are not aware of this world. I mean, they have full knowledge of the world, but they just don't have bad association. They know what's going on. Sometimes I ask them.
I was just talking about myself. Suppose if I'm advancing, if I'm not advanced enough, any next birth, I happen to take a birth from a Vaishnava family. But I might get put into a bad association, you know, and all my advancement is stalled because of that. So that risk is always there, right, Gurudev?
But you have a choice. You always have a choice between bad and good association. You have a choice. If you're choosing the right way now, you'll choose the right way in the future. So don't worry. Don't worry. Just make the right choices in life. And if you make the right choices in life, you'll be born into the proper family with the proper parents. That's all. I mean, I'm sure you had good parents, I mean, well-intentioned parents. But, you know, to expose children to every sort of, vile perversity, is that good? I mean, would you have sit down with your children and show them pornography? You know, you can use the same argument. You know, the children should be exposed to everything. So, you know, sit them down with some pornography and see. You know, maybe they'll like it. So you really have to understand children need to be protected.
And sometimes when they grow, teenager grow, they, you know, they go out of our control. Even in the childhood, we expose them to right association. But once they go to colleges and expose them to outer world, they have to choose what is the right way. And sometimes they don't make the right choice.
At a certain point in life, you know, everyone has to choose. But you can't force people. You have to explain. What I say is you have to explain the natural repercussions for following each course of action and let the person choose when a person's an adult. You know, you just explain. I wouldn't put restrictions on adult children and say, don't do this and don't do that, because that makes it more attractive. The things that you're told not to do are really attractive for children. I remember when I was young, I was told, I mean, I always use this example. It's not a bad thing, but in my house, we had several rooms I was not allowed to go into because they had all the antique furniture that was worth thousands and thousands of dollars. So my mother would say, don't ever go in this room of the house. And so immediately when she went out, I went in the room in the house and used all this antique furniture as a trampoline. You know what a trampoline is?
Yeah.
And I had a good time. Just disobeying my parents was the most blissful thing I ever did as a kid. It gave me so much joy. And even today, I mean, to tell you that today, when someone, I mean, I hate to say this, but let's say there's an older lady who somehow or other reminds me of my mother, I get great joy in not listening to her. It's just like one of the best parts of my life is not listening to, even if she's right. It's like blissful. not to listen to it. So anything you're forced to do, or you know, Pope, when you're an adult, is not good. I mean, when you're 5 years old, 6 years old, you know, fine. So what I do is I explain to people, it's your choice. Here's, if you take this path, this happens. If you take that path, that happens. That's all. And you find many times in families that are too restrictive, the parents go off, the children go off in the other direction because the parents are too restrictive. Does that make sense? But the parents' responsibility is to spend time with the children, talking to them, explaining the different ramifications of each course of action. And I think that's... Oh, there you are. You keep shifting squares. This is like this TV game, you know, Magic Squares or something like that. That everybody keeps shifting squares. Anyway, so it's, people have to make choices. You know, certain times there has, like Prabhupada didn't want to go to school, but he was a little kid. He wasn't like a teenager. And his mother had to hire someone to drag Prabhupada to school because Prabhupada wanted to stay home and just enjoy life. So that's a different thing. But, and also another thing about children is the parents have to be good examples. I mean, if the children should want to grow up to be like the parents. I didn't want to grow up and be like my parents for a variety of reasons. I mean, my good parents. But my father, he was just a workaholic. You know, he'd work like 10 o'clock at night to... I'm 10 o'clock in the morning, sorry. Not 10 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night or 11 o'clock at night. I don't want to be like that with no purpose in life. And my mother was a school teacher and nagging all the time. I didn't want to be like that either. So in other words, you have to be, the parents have to be the heroes of the kids. And also another point, now we're talking about good parenting. If the parents argue with each other, then the children have no shelter, and then they seek their own ways. So they should not, actually Prabhupada said, if the husband and wife argue, then there's no goddess of fortune in the house. And so they have to agree with each other. So anyway, there's different points. But if there's arguments, then the children have no shelter. Like that. So anyway, bringing up children is a difficult subject matter. In my book about empathic communication, there's a whole section dedicated to how to raise children. But everybody has their choices in life. You know, anybody can pick their association. But depending on who you associate with, you become like that person. It's a fact. So, whatever. So the children just have to understand that. It's the modes of nature, whoever you associate with. Okay, anyway, if you're born again in the womb, I will preach to you after you're born. How about that, Hrishikesh?
I just want to be around you, Gurudev, wherever you go.
I'll do your grain ceremony for you. I'll feed your first sweet rice. How about that? Let's make a deal.
That'll be great. As long as I'm near you, that's what I want.
Okay, that would be good. You know, just like feed your grains, little baby Hrishikesh. All right, so anybody else have a question before we break? Yes, Jarna, you have a question? You can unmute yourself.
Hare Krishna, I wanted to ask, paraphrasing, Krishna says, I know everybody, but nobody knows me, in one way. And here we see on the end, at the end of the second text, we say, when the cause of all causes become known, then everything unknowable becomes known and nothing remains unknown. So, if nobody can understand Krishna, how can we proceed this text and how people know?
Okay, that's very good. That is a very good question. Because she's pointing out the apparent contradiction where it says nobody can understand Krishna and then it says you will understand Krishna. you perform devotional service. So what that means is that you will never, never understand 100% Krishna, because Krishna is unlimited. But you can understand to a certain degree, to a certain limited degree, a very limited degree. When you have an unlimited person, I mean, it's just like all, let's say all the planets in the universe. You can understand some of the planets a little bit, maybe the Earth planet, but you can't understand all the planets. So you can understand a little bit about Krishna. All I want to know about Krishna is he loves me, I love him, and he has all these pastimes with Radharani. That's all I need to know. I just want to know Radha and Krishna. And as far as these other incarnations, yeah, I just want to know it's Krishna doing all these things. But I'm not demanding to know how Krishna does all these things, all the varieties of his opulences. I mean, it's just, it would be too confusing. I have a little tiny brain. I'm limited. Okay? Good question. So we should end now because, wow, it is late. So tomorrow morning, just to make an announcement, tomorrow morning I'm giving a class on Sanatan Goswami and Sanatan Goswami's disappearance. Normally I don't give class on Saturday morning, but tomorrow morning I'll be giving class on Saturday morning at 6:30 East Coast time, United States, and that is 10:30 in New Zealand, Fiji, and that is 8:30 in Australia. 8:30 at night, you know, 8:30 at night. 8:30 at night, 10:30 at night there. And in Europe, you just got to figure out what time it is there. And anyway, I'm sure you can all figure out what time it is.
Fiji?
You are. Fiji, I already explained. It's 10:30 in the morning.
Morning.
10:30 at night, sorry. 10:30 at night. Past your bedtime.
No. We can make it.
But for Nalini Kant, it's never past his bedtime. He never sleeps. Radha Padma keeps him working really hard. Get back to work. So that's good. Behind every great man, there's a great wife. So, all right, on that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.